Minneapolis, St. Paul. The Fan. Now back to the NFL Combine, thanks to Max at Pawn on KFAN.
Back at the Scouting Combine, Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium, with Minnesota Vikings head coach Leslie Frazier and Mike Wobshaw from Vikings.com. I'm Paul Allen. Leslie's going to be talking to the assembled media about 20 minutes from now. Very, very kind of him to stop by and share his thoughts on the Minnesota Vikings in the upcoming 2012 season with the Vikings Radio Network, the flagship FM 100.3. And this time last year when we chatted with you, when we were doing shows at the Combine, everybody was talking about the lockout.
Yeah.
It was all about the lockout. And free. You didn't get a full free agency. Right. You didn't get any camps. And then all of a sudden it just comes flooding at you. Mm-hmm. We ended up with McNabb, and then we start the season, and it's just so much different for you this year, isn't it?
Oh, so much different. Really looking forward to this offseason, just going through the process. And you're right. The lockout dominated the conversation a year ago this time, and everyone was wondering what was going to happen. So, and that lasted throughout the offseason. So this is more what you are accustomed to.
Are you more relaxed and comfortable in your head coaching skin because of the normalcy of the schedule and the routine now?
I am. Last year, with all the uncertainty, you always were coming up with contingency plans because there was always the possibility of getting back to football at this date or that date. And so it was a little helter-skelter in a lot of ways, whereas this year, there are specific dates for certain things, and we're on a schedule, and so this is much better.
Yeah. On the topic of a normal offseason where you're going to have OTAs and mini camps and rookie mini camps and all of that, you know, one part of that I'm really looking forward to is the assistant coaches, the position coaches, working with the players, because they didn't get to do that last year, specifically as it relates to young, inexperienced players. And then going even deeper, offensive line. I mean, Jeff Davidson, I have an immense amount of respect for his work on the offensive line. And then you look at who we have there, DeMarcus Love, Brandon Fusco, who knows who we're going to have at left tackle, perhaps a draft pick. I just think that you can't say enough about Davidson's impact on those young guys once he gets his hands on them.
Oh, no doubt about it. Jeff's an outstanding coach. I think our offensive line really improved this past season. And with the additions that we'll make, I mean, we are going to add some players to offensive line. Having a coach who's such a great teacher and excellent communicator really is going to be a plus for our players. And the fact that he'll be able to be around them during the offseason, it's going to put us so far ahead compared to a year ago.
I hope, speaking of left tackles, I hope I didn't compromise purple and gold integrity yesterday, because just off to your right when the players were walking by, it was big offensive lineman day yesterday. I want to meet Matt Khalil, man. Been talking about him since December, since we kind of knew what our fate was and we can start looking forward to next year. And so here, while Matt Khalil walks by him, I get up, radio show's over, go over there, I introduce myself to him. Paul Allen, I call games for the Vikings. And NFL PR guy was trying to whisk him away. I wanted to tape a quick little 3-minute interview. Had this nifty little device in my hand. I'm like, no, I could just do it right here. And no. We got to get Matt out of here. Well, no, you don't understand, sir. He might be on our team next year. So, I mean, I'm probably going to be doing this at rookie camp anyway.
Yeah.
So can we just start the process right now?
Yeah.
And then NFL PR guy was like, sir, I've got to get Matt down the hallway. And I said, I understand that. But given he may be wearing our colors next year, and I'm probably going to put together some deal for him anyway to join my radio show every so often, can I just start the process right now? Matt was looking at me like I was the biggest trip in the world, just holding on to my hand. And then I said, Matt, no matter how the chips fall, man, if you end up with the Minnesota Vikings, it would be great to have you on the team. Mm. And best of luck to you. And he said thank you and walked on. So I got a chance to meet Matt Khalil yesterday. Yes, I thought it was kind of a cool story.
No, he's a sharp young man, and we get a chance to meet him tonight and just talk with him. So we're looking forward to that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. In general, the offensive line class seems pretty good. I mean, past Matt Khalil, two guys from Stanford, a guard and a tackle. Mm-hmm. Iowa, Riley Reiff, another tackle. Pretty good class, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some guys there for us to take a look at, and that's one of the exciting things about this offseason, now having a chance to get involved with this process and try to evaluate these offensive linemen, because it is a deep group. So we're going to have some tough decisions to make.
So you said you're going to meet Mr. Khalil this evening, but I would assume that you've broken a lot of things down on tape with Rick Spielman and those guys, Scott Studwell, mm-hmm. and stuff, correct?
No question about it. Our scouts have done a great job of following him over the course of his career and provided us with great information, yes.
Well, when I met him yesterday and looked at him, he just, I mean, with no neck, kind of seems like a nasty streak, big, huge hands. It reminded me of what like a young Steve Hutchinson must have been like out of Michigan at RCA Dome when he was doing his combine. You know, you just get that feel for the comparison and everything. And is he super aggressive and kind of nasty like that with what you've seen from USC film?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who has that temperament that you're looking for, has the athletic ability. I mean, there's a reason that he's rated as high as he's rated, and a lot of it has to do with his smarts, his athletic ability, and then his temperament as well. And but as Mike mentioned, there are a lot of good candidates on the offensive line in this draft. So we're going to have some good decisions to make. I mean, whoever we end up taking, we're going to get a good player.
Who do you think your starting quarterback will be next year in the regular season?
Well, we expect Christian Ponder to be our starting quarterback. I mean, he's a guy who we think is on the come. The experience that he gained this past offseason should really benefit him and benefit our football team. And we're expecting him to take some big leaps, and part of that being the fact that he'll have a full offseason on his belt.
I know it's early in the process, Leslie, with 2 months to go in front of the draft. Say Robert Griffin III is available at the third overall pick, and you can't trade out of it for whatever the reason. Any idea what you would do?
Well, you know, when the time comes, we'll look at every position, just like we're doing now, leading up to the draft, and then we'll try to make the best decision for the organization whenever that time comes.
And a lot of it, too, it depends what happens here and in between now and the draft, too, with Robert Griffin III and all the players. I mean, there's still evaluations to go, right?
There's a lot to be done, a lot of work to be done. This is one step in a major process as you're trying to evaluate players, and there's so much homework to be done on each one of these players, including Robert Griffin.
Leslie, say you end up with a tackle, whether it's Khalil, somebody deeper in the draft or whatever, free agency, who knows, and you like that left tackle and you feel you can use him in regular season games. How much guard flexibility does Charlie Johnson have? I mean, is he would you be comfortable using him at guard?
Yeah, you know, Charlie played some guard here in Indianapolis and did a good job at the guard position. Was very successful in starting games and doing that. So we would not be uncomfortable moving him to guard and letting him start there. He's done it before and had success.
What kind of instructions did you give Phil Loadholt into the offseason? It's a contract year for Phil. You know, and I know traditionally speaking, it's good to be on the right side of that when you have talented players like him. You know, he's trying to get that next nice deal, and he's in a contract year. What kind of instructions did you give him into the offseason before you see him again at the camps?
Well, just to come back in the right frame of mind, help our football team improve and take care of his body, you know, during this offseason, but to come back ready to work, ready to take the necessary steps to be a better player going into 2012.
Yeah, you know, one thing coming off of 3-13 and some roster turnover here and you trying to create a culture and a winning identity, how do you feel about leadership in the locker room? Do you think that we're in a good spot? Are you looking for that type of guy to add, whether it be free agency or the draft? How would you assess that part of this team?
I think we have some solid leaders at some key positions, but I'd like to, you know, add something to the equation. I mean, that's a part of developing what you want when it comes to chemistry and having some guys to really take over the locker room when the coaches aren't around. Yeah. And that's an important part of having a successful football team. So it's a part of our team that we want to improve.
With that vocal leadership and with that natural God-given leadership of talented players who have equity and have put good stuff on film so that they can speak up and everybody will listen, Jared Allen comes to mind. Is John Sullivan that kind of guy? Because I kind of sensed before you guys signed him and extended him last year, you know, that John has that to him, but you kind of got to have another good season, get your deal set so that you have that leadership stuff to you before you start telling people, no, this is how it needs to be done if we're going to win games, and I need you to listen to me. Does John have that to him?
You know, Paul, John has really grown in that area. There was a time where it was more like what you said. You know, I just got to work on my game and try to improve so that I can gain some equity with my teammates.
He was always hurt.
And been injured and in and out of lineup. So, and inconsistent in his play.
Yeah.
Well, he really stepped it up this past season in more ways than one, not just on the field, but in the locker room as well. So he's one of those players who we're looking to become a vocal leader for us. He's shown that he has the potential to do that, and it began to show up a little bit more as the season went on. So we were pleased that he ended up signing back with us.
Leslie Frazier from the Combine, Wobby Paul Allen, a couple of quickies to close here. Leslie addresses the assembled media within the next 10 minutes. Is it a certainty Antoine Winfield will be on the team next year?
Well, I mean, he's a guy who's done a great job for organization for a number of years. I've enjoyed working with him and having him around. And, you know, he's one of those guys we're going to have to make a decision on as we get ready for this next season. But Antoine Winfield has been a highlight for us for so long. So we'll see what happens.
I've yet to meet defensive coordinator Alan Williams. What do you like about him?
I like the fact that he's an excellent teacher and a very good communicator with players, has a great rapport, but understands how to attack offenses, and has had a lot of success as a coach, in particular here in Indianapolis. But just his ability to be able to communicate and really be able to have a broader vision of, from a defensive standpoint, is something that was really impressive to me.
You know, free agency is a little sticky even with ours or with guys that we might go after. We don't know who's going to be available, but the draft class we do. So with you and Alan Williams, defensive coordinator, and Joe Woods, all having background in the secondary, what do you think about this class? Not so much the top guys like the Morris Claibornes and the Drake Kirkpatricks, but the depth of it. Because, I mean, we only have one pick at number three. We don't have three. So we're going to take one player there, but then after that, we might have to address secondary later in the draft. Is there depth there?
There's depth, but usually, Mike, at the corner position, if you don't get the guy early, it's tougher to develop that Pro Bowl caliber corner late in the draft. Not that you can't find one who can be a solid player, but generally the guys that go to Hawaii were guys that were taken early in the draft. So there is depth at the position. And we're going to try to find some guys that can help us improve in the secondary.
Sadly, we can't talk about specifics with free agency until mid-March. But nevertheless, just, you know, with us looking at the names, with the wide receivers and some of the cornerbacks and everything, I don't know if it's a product because of the way free agency went last year, how it was truncated and they couldn't get deals squared away and everything. Man, there are some really, really good names and players out there who can help immediately up and down free agency, right?
Mm-hmm. No question about it. I mean, there are some good players that are out there, and with things going a little bit later this year than they have in the past, you know, you kind of have to wait and see if guys end up re-signing with their present teams. But there are a lot of good players on the market.
What's the importance of striking early in free agency? Say you want a certain receiver who did not get the franchise tag, did not get extended, and you see that individual as a person who can complement somebody you want to draft a player or two with. Percy Harvin, Michael Jenkins coming back, I would assume, somebody who can blow the top off the defense. Do you need to get that individual to Winter Park very early and try to get that thing cut immediately and not let them leave?
I think so, Paul. I think when it's a key guy, top guy, you want to be the first one to get him in your building, because if he's the guy that you targeted, you don't want to let him out, because once he gets to the next team, you know, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to try to keep him in there until they get him signed. So you'd like to be that first visit, if at all possible.
The uncomfortable part of the business, Leslie, is coming up within the next few weeks, you know, where you're about $10 million under the cap right now. And, you know, to flirt with some of these receivers, corners, whatever you need, you got to get 20, 25, 30 under the cap, you know, which is just a guesstimate number I would throw out there, which means, you know, you got to eyeball friends and tell them that it's time to move on. And I mean, that's very difficult, isn't it?
It's a tough part of the business. There's no question about it, but that's what it is. It is a business, and it's a part of what we do. And it's something that every player has to deal with, every coach has to deal with it. And it's not an easy task by any means.
I think we're going to see a lot of teams utilize the franchise tag this year, and I don't think the Vikings will. That's just my sense right now. And if they don't, I think that's good, because it's not a very economical way to keep guys. I mean, it's a one-year guaranteed contract of a lot of money. And just going off that and then re-signing John Sullivan and Adrian and Chad before the season or during the season, I mean, I really feel like the Vikings have put themselves in a good position once free agency starts to address some needs.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have actually gone through free agency in our own right by re-signing some of our key players.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to take a look at other NFL free agents, but I think we've done the right thing with our players.
Yeah. In closing, I asked Rick Spielman this yesterday. I know you're not comfortable talking about it, but I think, you know, I think it's a very big part of the offseason. And, you know, fairness in Legality Act, I hope whatever is supposed to work out with Chris Cook works out for the fairness of everybody involved. But here you are at the combine. You're looking at cornerbacks. We need secondary help. Everybody listening knows that. Depth, talent. And, you know, here you got this guy that you took early in the second round a couple of years ago, and you got the case off the field. How much does that impact looking at the combine, handling free agency, then dealing with the result of the court case, then drafting? I mean, it impacts the offseason, doesn't it?
To a degree. I mean, we really have to operate Paul as if he's not a Minnesota Viking, as we are preparing for this draft, as we're going out to evaluate players until we know conclusively what's going to happen with this court case. And we got to operate as if he's not a part of our team, and that's the approach we have to take.
You know, I don't mean to be flippant or cavalier here, but we're looking, and Chris may very well end up being an unbelievably good player for your team or somebody else. You know, but I look back and calling the games and being close to it, he's played 12 games with no interceptions. So, you know, I mean, it's not like we're talking about Deion Sanders here. You know, I think people look at it because of where he was selected in the draft, then what happened, and then the fact that he was kept on the team and on the payroll, and there are just a lot of question marks the public has about it. It's a very sticky situation, isn't it?
In some ways it is, and you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Good luck. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Leslie Frazier, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Charlie Casserly, former general manager of the Washington Redskins and the Houston Texans, currently an analyst for NFL Network, joins us next from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium. Thanks to Max Ippon on The Fan. The Fan.
Gopher Rubes helped take the Frozen Axe back to Minneapolis. Take the plunge for Special Olympics on March 3rd on Lake Calhoun in Minneapolis. If you raise more money than the Madison, Wisconsin Polar Plunge, you take the Frozen Axe home. For all the details, check out KFAN.com and type in the keyword community.
Back at Steam Speculation Central, the National Football League Combine from Lucas Oil Stadium. Paul Allen, Mike Wobshaw from Vikings.com, joined by one of the more respected former general managers in the National Football League, Charlie Casserly. Spent a lot of time with the Washington Redskins. Also, as I mentioned earlier, was with the Houston Texans when everybody complained about Mario Williams being taken over Reggie Bush, and it worked the way of the Texans. Mario Williams, an unrestricted free agent, too, by the way. And Charlie Casserly joins us now. Charlie, Paul Allen, good to chat with you again.
Hey, great to be with you now.
And you, Charlie, with NFL Network now, you'll be able to watch him later in the afternoon on NFL Network. But Charlie and I were just sharing some off-the-microphone stories. Me being from Prince George's County and living in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, Charlie was the general manager of the Washington Redskins back when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. And I started
I wasn't a general manager back then. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. What did? Who was it then? It wasn't Bobby Bethard.
Well, back when you started following the team, George Allen was the general manager.
And
that's who originally brought me to the Redskins, was George Allen.
Yeah, that's right.
So
you know, living in Fort Washington and Oxon Hill and in Washington, D.C., there are just so many people that I used to go see in Carlisle, Pennsylvania at Redskins training camp, mm-hmm. that you worked intimately with, yeah, as a member of the Redskins, and we rattled off a bunch of names, but I remember the whole chain when it went from Sonny Jurgensen to Billy Kilmer, and then Theismann comes in from Notre Dame. Well, it's Theismann, he changes his name, comes in from Notre Dame, now he's Theismann, and what went into Joe Theismann taking the job from Billy Kilmer and then moving on. Remember those days?
Oh, no question about it. Theismann came in and they got the two veterans who really didn't get along, and he said, well, I'm going to be the starter. Well, that united the two veterans, Jurgensen and Kilmer, right away. They had one thing in common. We don't like Theismann.
Yeah, those were great days. And, you know, I had Joe Theismann on the radio within the last 3-4 months, and I shared a story with him about a Monday Night Football game, and I'm pretty sure you were with the team at the time. Charlie, I think the game finished maybe 9-5 or 7-5, and Theismann ran around in the end zone at the end of the game on Monday Night Football to kill the clock. And Charlie Waters got so mad at him, the safety for the Cowboys, that after Theismann slammed the ball down because they just won football's greatest rivalry, Waters took him by the back of his jersey and slammed him down by the stanchion. You remember that moment?
You know what? I don't remember the Waters, but I do remember him running around the end zone, and somebody, and us thinking later, wait a minute now. You know, if you fumble the ball here, okay, we could lose this game. So I remember that part of it there. I had forgotten about the Waters part of it.
Charlie Casserly, NFL Network. By the way, he tweets. It is at Charlie Casserly, CharleyCasserly. If you want to follow him via Twitter, it is at Charlie Casserly. I'm old school like you. I don't tweet. It's just not for me. I'm. It was it. something that the Olmeyers and the NFL networks asked you to do respectfully, or is it something you thoroughly enjoy?
Well, CBS got us started on it this year, so that's why we do it, and we're obviously going to do it here in the spring with the draft coming up, yep. So there'll be a lot of information there.
Excellent.
You mentioned the draft. You're here at the Combine. Great to have you. And if you look around here at the media center, you'd think the draft was here. Like, that's how important the Combine was. But then when you talk to GMs and some coaches, they downplay it. They say it's an important part of the process, but it's just one more day in a long process over the year. So where would you put it? How important is the Combine? Where does it fit into the process?
Well, there's parts of it that are more important than others. The medical. This is the first time you get your chance to get your hands on a player medically. So the medical is important. Yeah. The drug test is important. It's the first time you can drug test them. The rest of it is just part of the process. You need to get the measurables. How fast is he? How tall is he? How much does he weigh? But the speed can vary. One thing you have to watch here is evaluating speed. See what he plays like on tape. Then come and see what he runs. If he runs significantly faster, I would throw it out because then he's trained for it. If he runs slower than you thought, then you really got to take a hard look at it. Maybe this guy isn't as fast as you thought. So it's one part of the process. 90% of the grade is based on tape. The last point I'd make is this. What you do in the spring, let's take the Vikings, you know, Matt Khalil. His name is being written in there.
Love him.
But there's a player called Riley Reiff at Iowa.
Yeah.
Some people like him better.
Really?
So what you have to do is you fine-tune those evaluations in the spring. Part of it is your workout, and yep. This is part of that process.
Excellent.
You know, the story that I have about you is, I can't remember what year it was, but it must have been one of the first years that you were doing what you're doing now, when you weren't in the front office, and you came to training camp in Mankato, and you're sitting at the top of Blakesley Stadium watching practice, and I'm just like, you know, I must have been an intern. I'm wet behind the ears, don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, there's Charlie Castro. I'm going to go up and sit down next to him and talk to him. And so I did it, and we sat
up. I remember this, yes.
Okay, and we talked about a certain player who was drafted very high in the previous draft, and I for some reason shared the opinion that I just didn't like him. I didn't think it was going to work out, and he had all the measurables, looked really good, everyone liked him, and you agreed with me. So are there things that you just can't put your finger on as a GM or as an evaluator of talent, where you just have to go with your gut, or there's some sort of intangible that you have to measure? And that, I mean, that's a skill to be able to do that.
It is, yes. And you know, you hate to say a gut, because but at the end of the day, you have to make a decision on it. And you just weigh everything there is. But the measurables are not as big a part of it as people think. Now, you can't have a linebacker running 5'4".
Right.
Okay?
Right.
We know that. And you can't have a 5'5" cornerback. I mean, that doesn't work too often. Those are the extremes. But you can find exceptions to almost every measurable.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you talked about the speed and just, you know, the combine and the shorts and everything and becoming overwhelmed by the measurables that you see. I mean, we got completely burned by Troy Williamson a few years ago out of South Carolina when he came here and zipped through a 4.2 the year after we let go of Randy Moss, and we absolutely reached for him at 7. It was a complete disaster, set us back X amount of years. How do you avoid that? How do you control yourself? I think the guy's name's Vontaze Burdick from Arizona State, where I was watching some stuff on him yesterday. Even though he runs around tackles and runs around things a lot, he's real splashy, and he's very fast, and he did it in the Pac-12. How do you avoid stuff like that if you're a general manager?
Well, first of all, you look at the guy's overall production. Go back to that. I mean, has this guy produced at his position? You know, in Williamson's case, I think the thing we all missed, I'm right in there with the Vikings. He says, I never thought this guy had a problem catching the football.
Oof.
Okay? And that probably was his biggest problem.
Worst ever.
Yeah, catching the ball.
See? Terrible.
And that's something I think a lot of us misevaluated there. So sometimes you do make mistakes. But really, scouts don't get caught up in highlights. They're very methodical. They go through it play after play and grade it. The last thing they do is pay attention to the highlights and the excitement part of it there. They're very methodical and critical thinkers.
Why at the end of the day, and I'm sure you've shared the story, but why did you take Mario Williams ahead of Reggie Bush?
Well, to make it simple, okay, I looked at Mario Williams as a complete player. Guy could play the run, play the pass, could play 60 plays a game. I thought Reggie Bush was a situational player. I thought his size was against him as far as being able to play every down. And at the end of the day, with the first pick in the draft in 2006, it was $9 million. Okay? So to me, you can't be paying a guy $9 million if he's not going to be able to line up and play every down for you.
Yeah.
And that was the fundamental difference.
Yeah.
Mariota's a guy who's probably going to hit unrestricted free agency, get paid a lot of money, don't know where he's going to go. But on the issue of free agency, what do you see the environment being? Because for the Vikings, for example, need a field-stretching outside receiver to run vertical routes. And right now, it looks like the wide receiver market's going to be really thick and deep, and so that's good news for the Vikings. But what about, do you think there's going to be a ton of franchise tags where all of a sudden the Bills franchise tag Stevie Johnson and the Eagles with Deshaun or whoever it might be, and now that market kind of dries up?
Well, certainly some of the better players. I think the Eagles will keep him. I don't think the Bills will franchise Johnson. That's too much money for him. One to watch will be the San Diego.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because they've never extended his contract because they didn't want to. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that kind of tells you what their long-range thinking. He's probably the best player. I think there's a lot of quality at receiver, but it's more like number two quality. I don't know how many speed-type receivers are really out there for this group. But there are a number of good players, but I don't know how many speed guys.
Last one for Charlie Casserly. He tweets, at Charlie Casserly. Charlie is with an E. At Charlie Casserly. Do you think we'll be okay with Christian Ponder at starting quarterback?
I think so. I think Ponder was a guy that he's a smart guy. He knows where to go with the ball. He's got enough physical skills to play. I like his movement ability. I think he's going to be fine. I think they reached on him when they drafted him, but almost all quarterbacks get reached on. So I think as the team gets better, he will continue to get better.
Thanks for making time for us, Charlie.
All right, always a pleasure, guys.
I'll meet you at the top of Blakesley Stadium.
That's
next
right.
Year.
We'll see you then.
Good. Yep, we'll talk to you then. Thank you. Charlie Casserly, NFL Network, longtime general manager in the National Football League, worked extensively with the Washington Redskins, also used to work with the Houston Texans. And again, a little later today, you'll be able to see him on NFL Network as they do excellent, excellent second and none work, Wobby, from the combine. When we got done yesterday, after we were taping the interviews and everything, and, you know, one of the conversations that we had earlier, we're going to play back here shortly with Jason LaConfora,
yeah,
a very, very opinionated reporter from NFL Network. I was watching the breakdown of the players, and this is, you know, for Rube 1 and 1A,
yeah,
you and I, PA in the patch, this is just terrific because it starts the opinion formulating process, so you don't have to pretend like you know a lot about all these names that you're hearing and everything, where we don't. I mean, we can go to YouTube and watch and watch highlight packages, post them on show pages, Vikings.com, but when you talk to the Charlie Casserlys and guys like that about these people, Mike Mayock and so on, you know, like, for instance, Vontaze Burdick, I just brought up his name. In a conversation I had yesterday with Mike Mayock off the microphone and talking about him, Quentin Copples, the mm-hmm. defensive end from North Carolina. There was another guy, a wide receiver from Miami, his last name Streeter, where he, and then he went on later on NFL Network and did the bit. He called it the all swimsuit team,
yeah,
where he thinks that those are going to be three guys, wide receiver Streeter from Miami, Copples, and this Vontaze character might be a linebacker or a defensive end or a hybrid from Arizona State. I had heard of him, never seen him play. I don't watch Pac-12 football. But he thinks they are going to be overdrafted, as he put it to me yesterday, because of what they're going to start doing inside the stadium behind us with the 40s and with the eye test. And you just got to be so careful not to fall in love with stuff like that and overdraft these individuals.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot at the combine. I think you look at a guy like Jamarcus Russell a few years ago, it happened with him. And, you know, and the all swimsuit team and putting Copples on there makes so much sense to me because I remember coming back from the Senior Bowl and talking to you about him. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, wow, this guy, you should see him. Paul, you should see him. He wears number 90. He's from North Carolina. He's huge. He's 6'6". I mean, I've just got Julius Peppers running through my mind.
Yeah.
You know, but it was not based on anything that I saw him do on the field. Yep. I've never watched him play a college game. But here I am thinking he's going to be a top 10 guy. He looks so good. And that's exactly what you're just talking about, that these guys look good out on the field in gym shorts doing 40-yard dashes and vertical leaps. But it's all about their production on the field. And as Charlie said, are they an all-around player?
Yeah. And how much are they going to play? Like Mario Williams compared to Reggie Bush, it was, he formulated it beautifully. And believe me, I mean, Charlie Casserly, when he was general manager of the Houston Texans, he was savaged locally, yes, and nationally.
Oh yeah,
off what Reggie Bush did at USC, and then he takes Mario Williams, I think from North Carolina State, I think he played at North Carolina State with Manny Lawson. I think they bookended. You know, it's unbelievable, those two together. So, I mean, he was just destroyed, and it was absolutely the right way to do it. Now, you look at this year, and, you know, we're talking to so many people, and we're uncovering so much information to help formulate the conversation for the next 2 months. You know, one of the feelings, just gut feelings that I'm starting to get, I think I saw him play 3 or 4 times last year, including against the University of Minnesota, where he was brilliant, but most have been over the last X amount of years, with all due respect, always. Russell Wilson, the 5'11 quarterback from Wisconsin. I love him. I absolutely love him, and I love him to succeed in the National Football League. And it may not be immediately, and it may not be for the Vikings. I mean, I think we're under the same belief that it's definitely going to be Ponder into Rosenfels. We believe they'll re-sign Sage Rosenfels. I've gone with that on the radio for months.
Yes.
Joe Webb might be part of the mix. Maybe it's a true offseason to see if Joe can run routes, if he can remember the plays, if he can become any form of a depth-type receiver at wide receiver, a depth-type player or wide receiver. I'm bored with Blazer. I don't know about you. I mean, we can have an entire free agency draft, camps. We can let's put Blazer out to pasture.
It's done.
He has a bowed tendon. He blew the turn, and everybody got cost money.
Right.
So let's forget Joe Webb in the Blazer.
Let's do something different with him.
I'm bored with Blazer. Let's do something else with him. Let's fade it. Let's do something with him. So maybe he's in the mix. So I don't think the Vikings are a team that would take Russell Wilson. Somebody's going to get a very smart kid who has a natural knack to just get it done.
And he's a tremendous athlete. He was a great shortstop in baseball, a tremendous shortstop. He was at the Senior Bowl. Yeah, and he was at the Senior Bowl, Paul. And the three quarterbacks that the Vikings had.
Oh, with the Rockies. That's right. He was in the Rockies organization.
Yes. And he looks like a shortstop, too. He's not the tallest thing in the world, but he's so athletic, and you hit on some of his qualities. But the other thing that I noticed about him, he played for the North team, for Leslie Frazier's team at the Senior Bowl.
Okay.
The three quarterbacks were Russell Wilson from Wisconsin, Michigan State's Kirk Cousins, and then Kellen Moore from Boise.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at our roster, talking to some of our assistant coaches. I'm just like, Kellen Moore, that's sweet. I mean, we saw how many games he won.
Yeah.
And just the enigma that is Kellen Moore, such a great player, so accurate, gets the ball out on time. I'm just like, so he'll probably be the starter. Well, Russell Wilson gets there, and within hours, it's clear that he's the best quarterback there, and he's going to be the one who plays the most for us. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even over the Boise State guy.
I thought so. I mean, the Boise State guy's good. He's got a little bit of a hitch in his motion. I think he's left-handed. He's a little bit shorter than you'd like, but the ball gets out, and it gets on time. But, I mean, we got 6'6 defensive ends trying to flag you down, and it might not work for Kellen. I don't know. Took most of his snaps out of the gun in college, but Russell Wilson was put together, a good leader, a little bit quiet, but, I mean, there's just no doubt about it with Russell Wilson that he was the best quarterback on the team.
How about the mistake I made yesterday when you were just sitting there? You know, we got these players walking by us now. We just had some receivers walking by.
Yeah.
And a player walked by us, and before I could see his name on the back of his shirt, I thought it was Alshon Jeffrey, the wide receiver. Well, it was Cordy Glenn, the offensive lineman from Georgia. I mean, everybody makes Alshon Jeffrey sound so fat and so slow that now that these wide receivers are walking by us now, I'm just looking for this big pear-shaped, stocky-looking thing to come by wearing a Gamecocks hat or something,
right?
So we can call him Alshon Jeffrey. The negative steam on him. I mean, how big is this combine for Alshon Jeffrey if you're looking for a receiver?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and you put me on this a while ago that this would be a draft where you're going to get some receivers in the 3, 4, 5. Those rounds, and you made a good example of Greg Jennings as being that type of guy that you can get. But, I mean, if you look at the sheet of wide receivers, there are a lot of good wide receivers, and not every team is going to use their first or second round pick on them. You're going to get some good receivers in the middle rounds of this draft.
Well, here are some notes I took yesterday off some steam I got about some deep draft, mid-draft type receivers doing the rigorous interviewing process that 9 to Noon does, where we have notepads and we tweet and we want to be the first out there. And, you know, we want to brag about the depth of the pages we have on the internet.
Yep.
Where, I mean, I just had so much stuff. It just took 3, 4, 5 pages on the internet.
Yeah, with your film study, you did a good job with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. With that film study, it just takes me so long. And then, you know, I get these hits and everything. But Mohamed Sanu or Sanu.
Okay.
Not sure how to pronounce the last name. But here's what I wrote down about him yesterday after my extensive film study and then the breadth and depth of interviewing that
Paul.
Did. Good hand placement and upper body strength to fight off the jam when he gets it. And I think this is a threat to beat the defender over the top due to good acceleration and better straight line speed than he's often credited with possessing. Seinu Sanu has several outstanding, I can't read my writing, qualities, but none more impressive than his, I should have taped it, natural receiving skills.
Mutt.
Throttles down quickly, sinks his hips, and has good burst left and right to generate separation on underneath routes. But this was the part that I liked most.
Okay, tell me more.
And I can't tell you who told me this. It's very confidential.
Son of a...
Takes his role as a blocker seriously. Adrian Peterson, Toby Gerhart, Jordan Todman. Got to have wide receivers who can block. Percy Harvin, can he block?
He can block.
Ask Adrian Wilson and or Patrick Peterson if Percy Harvin can block when he was busting ass on all those runs up the middle, paving the way for Adrian. What up? Welcome to the NFL, rookie. And ask any members of the Green Bay Packers secondary if Michael Jenkins can block. Mohamed Sanu takes his role as a blocker very seriously.
Well, I mean, we talk about where the combine fits in the scouting process, and I think some people overblow it. Funny, there's no blocking drills for wide receivers at the combine. So I think we need George Stewart or someone like that to start implementing the wide receiver blocking portion of the combine.
Mike Wobshaw, Vikings.com. Paul Allen here from the scouting combine. Thanks to Max at Pawn online. It's maxatpawn.net. When we return, we'll play back an interview we conducted with Jason LaConfora. Very extensive on free agency. Not only free agency, but the approach the Minnesota Vikings should take with free agency. And we taped that earlier with Jason LaConfora. We'll play that back, plus Rich Gannon on the horizon. It's 9 to noon from the NFL Combine on The Fan.
PA broadcasting live from the NFL Combine.
Scouting Combine Indianapolis, Paul Allen. Earlier, Mike Wobshaw and yours truly had the opportunity to record an interview with Jason LaConfora from NFL Network. And we talked to Jason about a lot of things, including the Vikings' approach to free agency. Jason, very, very plugged into the National Football League. And I began saying, hey, Jason, pretty busy time of the year, huh? You have your hands full, don't you?
Yeah, it never ends. The league is smart. They've got the calendar figured out. And there's only a few weeks in the year where it's truly radio silence. And this certainly isn't one of them. I mean, you've got franchise tags. No, none of them have been applied yet. But between now and March 5th, I'm guessing 16, 17, 18 teams end up using them. You've got teams trying to restructure their cap and get cap compliant and create more cap room. Because as you said, Paul, free agency is right around the corner, March 13th. So we'll have some deals that get done before then. You know, guys who like Stanford Rout who got cut, he could go ahead and sign already. And we haven't even mentioned Peyton Manning yet. And that's that's the elephant in the room. And when he gets released and what happens with his contract. And you know, you could have the specter of Peyton Manning going and working out for teams, which I don't know that anyone ever thought they'd see that, but given his health and everything, I mean, you could have Peyton Manning working out for the Dolphins, Peyton Manning working out for the Redskins. So that's a huge story, obviously.
You know, this is so cool to have you because we can talk about free agency and players on other teams. If we have Rick in here or Leslie, like, we can't talk about other players. So
yeah, no tampering.
Right, so we're going to talk about other players. I want the Vikings to get a vertical field stretching outside wide receiver. Pretty thick free agent wide receiver market. Who, with the Vikings cap space, maybe it'll be $20 million. What kind of player are the Vikings looking at?
Well, you know, a lot will depend on franchise and who hits the market. I mean, you can look at a long list of names now, but if Vincent Jackson gets franchised and DeSean Jackson gets franchised and Wes Welker gets franchised and Dwayne Bowe gets franchised, well, all of a sudden it's not so deep. Right. I think one interesting scenario will be Mike Wallace with Pittsburgh. Now, he's restricted and not unrestricted, but Pittsburgh is they're in a little bit of a salary cap hell right now, and they're trying to figure out how to make this work. If they franchise Mike Wallace, then no one's going to give him two first-round picks for him. I mean, he'll stay, but then you've got to be paying him almost $10 million, and you've got to fit him under your cap immediately, right. You know, come the start of the league year. They don't know if they can do that. If they put the high restricted tender on him, which is a first-round pick, that's going to entice some teams to maybe say, wait a minute, Pittsburgh's a little bit vulnerable right now cap-wise, and all it takes is a first-round pick to get Mike Wallace, a 25-year-old receiver who's established, who is tall and who's maybe the fastest guy in the league, and who has good hands. Well, I don't know if it makes sense for the Vikings picking where they're picking, but I think you start looking at teams at the back end of the first round. What does New England need? What could they use? Well, a big vertical receiver. Mm-hmm. Well, Baltimore Ravens, what do they need? Well, they need somebody to stretch the field. Okay, well, where are they picking? San Francisco, well, what do they need? I mean, they have no vertical dimension to their game whatsoever, and they're picking, what, 29th?
Yeah.
Are you going to get a player better than Mike Wallace, 29?
Exactly.
I don't know. So I think that will be an interesting scenario, and whether some teams pluck a restricted guy. Arian Foster's a similar situation. If you're Cincinnati and you're going to let Cedric Benson walk and you're sitting on $35 million cap space and you're picking low for the first time in a while, would you make a run at Arian Foster if it only takes a first-round pick?
Yes, I would.
And obviously, you know, the Vikings, they've been down this road with Steve Hutchinson, and we saw, you know, how that unfolded. So I think it'd be real interesting to see if someone tries. You can't use that poison pill again, but if someone tries to structure a contract for a restricted player in a way that it makes their current team unable to do it under the cap.
Yeah. Jason, what about New Orleans? Because there's absolutely no way are they not going to work something out with Drew Brees.
He'll never hit the street. I mean, they'll franchise him if nothing
else. Okay, well, with that said, it looks like because of the franchise, the very doable franchise number for a guard, that Carl Nix, you know, every bit as good as Jarry Evans.
Yes.
I think he'll get the franchise tag. They'll work something out with Drew Brees, but they're still looking at Marcus Colston and
Porter. He'll hit the market. Marcus Colston will hit the market.
Really?
I don't see a scenario where he stays.
And Robert Meacham, too.
Probably.
Wow. That could change the dynamics of one of the NFL's most explosive offenses.
It could. I mean, and I think we'll also learn how much is it these guys and how much is it Drew Brees. And I think as long as you have Drew Brees and you've got a pretty good offensive line and they've got some interchangeable parts at running back who do move the chains when they have to, that's a team that when they get the lead can run the football. And Sean Payton, as much as you talk about his innovation, he demands that they run the football when they have a lead at certain times and move the chains in that regard. They're more balanced than people probably give him credit for. I mean, I think that we'll find that out. But, I mean, I think, you know, Colston's, what, pushing 30?
Yeah.
I mean, they especially with their dynamics, they are very much a small market team. I don't know that – there's no way they're keeping all three, and they might have a hard time keeping two. And if they don't get Brees done in the next – how many days is it between now and March 5th? I don't know. I'm losing count. But then Jarry Evans, you know, Carl Nix hits the street.
Let me take it a step farther. We won three games last year being the Vikings. Absolutely in need of secondary help. If you're the Vikings and the price was fair, would you try to run down Tracy Porter?
If I'm the Vikings, I'm just trying to accumulate draft picks. I mean, you got to be real about where they are. And, you know, they probably started this process, some would say, maybe a year too late. I mean, this was a team last year in the offseason. I thought if everything broke well, maybe they win 6 or 7 games. And they ended up winning half of that. I mean, especially when you're talking about free agents about to hit their third contract, I don't know that it makes sense. I mean, if you're talking about a 25, 26-year-old guy, in some cases, yeah. Because you might get two contracts out of them. But 29, 30, 31, 32... I mean, I don't know that that's the route they need to go, and I don't really see them going that route. I think you have to be very calculated about free agency. The next era of Vikings football will be determined by how well Christian Ponder can play and what they put around him in terms of young talent through the draft and trying to have stick with the nucleus you have of the Percy Harvins and the APs and you know, Jared Allen, and got a few more years in the tank for sure. And trying to get younger. I mean, they're truly a rebuilding football team, and I don't know that free agency, especially this year, makes a whole lot of sense for them.
NFL Network reporter Jason LaConfora from the Combine.
With the Vikings at number 3, and I don't know if it's wishful thinking or if it's really going to happen, the Rams say they take Matt Khalil. Robert Griffin III now on the board when the Vikings are on the clock.
Wishful thinking.
Wishful thinking,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't see, I mean, I think quarterbacks are 1-2. St. Louis is open for business. They'll trade that pick, and whether it's Washington or Cleveland, some will depend on where Matt Flynn goes, some will depend on what happens with Peyton Manning, but I see Griffin going too.
Okay, and now with the new CBA, the new environment, rookie wage scale, do you think teams are going to be more comfortable trading when they're in the top 5?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think St. Louis will bear evidence of that, and they'll get what they can get, and then we'll see. I mean, I think if Minnesota's got a lot of needs. They go a lot of different ways at 3. I mean, a lot of people think that you're talking, you know, you mentioned Khalil, that could be a franchise left tackle. I mean, that would make some sense for them. You know, if there's a pass rusher there that makes sense for them, I mean, yeah, maybe they're open for business as well. I mean, maybe, you know, Minnesota, maybe it ends up making sense for them to drop back to 6 or 7 and still get a comparable player and pick up draft picks. They have to accrue draft picks.
Yeah, I mean, you worked in the Beltway. The guy that I would endorse right now for the Vikings would be Matt Khalil. You know, I just think he shores up the offensive line, and I really want him to be available.
It's a great building block piece. Yeah. I mean, if you find a franchise left tackle in the top 5 and he meets expectations, you're in pretty good shape. And if Ponder is a quarterback, and now you've got a quarterback and a left tackle and a running back and an X-factor slash guy in Harvin, you know, then you're probably all right on that side of the ball, and you address some things on defense.
Last one for me, Jason, knowing at least the last time we chatted, you were Maryland-based. So let's pretend like this is Pimlico, and we're handicapping the Preakness. And your Peyton Manning-related options are returns to the Colts, goes to Miami, Washington, Arizona, yeah. Seattle, all the way down to doesn't play again. If doesn't play again is 8-1 or higher on that morning line, I'm pushing all my chips in the middle. Do you think I lose?
First of all, I'm taking return to the Colts off the board. That horse scratched. I don't see that happening. I'm not even taking odds on that.
Mm-hmm.
Will he play? I don't know. Will he do everything in his capacity to play? Yeah. Will he try to play? Yeah. Will some team give him a chance to prove he can play? Yeah. Now, if the never regenerates. But I could see a team like Miami being desperate enough to go ahead and do it, even if the nerve hasn't regenerated. They take their chances. You spend the offseason, you're selling Peyton Manning jerseys. You let him rehab there. You do everything you can to get him ready to play. And you see, you make a go of it. And I think, if you're handicapping teams, I believe he'll end up in Miami. I think Washington will be just as desperate, but I don't think that situation and scenario will make as much sense for him. You don't have an offensive line there. You can't necessarily run the football there. Who are you throwing the ball to? Fred Davis? I mean, if they franchise him, I mean, they don't have any weapons. Yeah, they have a lot of cap room. They'll go get people, but I don't know that he wants to play his brother twice a year. I don't know that he wants to be in that media market in Washington is very different than Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Very different. A lot more contentious, a lot more media. I just don't see him there. I think he's got a home in Miami. They've got a left tackle. They've got Brandon Marshall, some people who can make plays for him. I think Miami would make more sense for him. Arizona, I could see being a wild card in this whole thing as well. But, if I'm given odds now, I'd put the best odds on the Dolphins.
Last one for Jason. Wobby?
It kind of seems like at this time of year, a lot of people are thinking the same thing. There's a consensus. Quarterback's 1-2, and a cornerback's not going to go till this, and such left tackle's the best one. And then on draft day or right before draft day, some huge story that no one thought would break happens. What do you think that's going to be this year?
Wow.
Randy Moss returns?
I think he'll be back before then. If he's coming back, I think he'll have signed by then. I mean, Peyton Manning could be that story. I mean, who knows if Peyton Manning's health by then? I mean, Peyton Manning, they'll still be made a team as they're coming up on the clock, thinking, are we really going to do this? Are we going to, Miami, are we going to trade up for RG3? Or do we think in 2 weeks our doctors are telling us Peyton Manning could actually throw the way we need him to throw?
That's a good one.
That could still be out there. And I mean, on a much lesser level, I think as we've seen teams continue to – the spread has almost become commonplace. I mean, teams are going four wide more than we've ever seen in the past. I think there's going to be a premium on tight ends. I mean, we've seen what New England's done with their tight ends. It's very much a copycat league. I mean, if you're going to spread people out and you've got freaking nature tight ends that people can't cover, if you've got a tight end who can run, I think you're going to see tight ends going higher than maybe we've seen in a long, long time. And conversely, if you've got a linebacker who can run and cover – then that's also because people are basically trying to use matchups to exploit a not very athletic outside linebacker with a freaking nature tight end. So you need to be able to combat that.
Yeah.
So I think two positions that probably have been undervalued for a long time, if you take a money ball perspective on the draft, maybe rise as we get closer, as more teams start to look around and say, wait a minute, what's really going on here and what do we have to do personnel-wise and schematically to thwart it?
Last one, I promise. 30 seconds, you get it all. If you're the Vikings, one player via free agency and the third overall pick. Give us one free agent we have to get.
Oof.
And third overall pick, what would you do? Forget trades and the whole thing.
I don't know that there is. I really don't look at them as a team. When you're talking about a team, to me, that's one player away in free agency.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a New Orleans or, maybe that's a Baltimore. I don't. There isn't, to me, a must-have free agent for the Vikings. I don't think they're there as an organization right now. And I think you take the left tackle at 3 if he's there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Jason LaConfora from NFL Network back at the Combine. Thanks to Max Ippon. When we return, Peter King from SI.com and NBC will join us at the 2012 National Football League Combine in Indianapolis.